You're listening to the Avenue Church Podcast. Our desire is that this message will inspire you to encounter Jesus and find a better way to do life. For more info and to connect with us, visit us online at theavenuechurch.com. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, Avenue. So good to see you. Glad you're here in the room. Those of you in Ennis online, hopefully nobody's on the porch because it's really cold. If you're new here, thank you for being here. And let me just start with saying, I never sit down in 36 years of preaching. I've never sat down to preach. But last Wednesday, I went to a place that's supposed to stretch you out and make you feel better. They stretched me out. They got that part down. And I'm not a doctor. You know, I play one online, though. And so I've pretty much got it figured out. I either need to take Advil or I need to get my leg amputated. And so I'm somewhere in between. I'll try to figure out what it is. I've already had three of our doctors come to me today, thank goodness, and diagnose me. So I know what it is now, so I'm going to be okay. But I couldn't miss, and I probably shouldn't have come to preach today, but number one, it's Life Day. And there's nothing more powerful than seeing people say yes to Jesus and following in baptism. I can't miss that. And then second reason, it's a little selfish, I was locked in my house for 5 days last week, and we did not have church. And by the way, my wife was gone to Alaska, where it was warmer than it was here in Texas, and I almost lost my mind in that 5 days staying home. So unless I would have my leg amputated, I was going to be here this morning to preach. We're starting a new series, and I want you to be ready, because the month of February, we're going to do a series called Love That Lasts. And it's on relationships, so buckle up. Everybody enjoys that, I know. And so as we start talking about a love that lasts, I think we all want love that lasts, right? But the first thing we need to do is agree what love actually is, because everybody has a different definition of what love is. And I'm afraid the English language doesn't help us much with the word love. It just doesn't. In Greek, there's several different words for love, and it makes such more sense than in English. But in English, you love your wife, you know, you love your children, you love tacos, you love football. And if you think all those words mean the same thing, you need some help in your relationships. I mean, those words don't mean the same thing. I love tacos so much more than my wife. I can't even, no, I'm just kidding. I mean, with that in mind though, how do we define what love really is? Because in real life, love is complicated. Now, if you watch Hollywood, love is just falling in love. You just see someone and, you know, bells and whistles go off and you fall in love with them. The problem with that definition is if you can accidentally fall in love, you can fall out of love. And I want to tell you quickly, and maybe some of you have experienced this and use these words, there's no such thing as falling out of love. And I want to get that clear. You can choose to stop loving someone, but it's a choice. You can't fall out of love. So as we define what love is and what love isn't, social media tells us that love is matching clothes and good light. You know, it's all different for everybody, but I want to look at a passage today, and I want to explain what Paul, the apostle, says that love truly is. Now, the problem with this passage is you're all familiar with it. Most of you probably had it read at your wedding. And we always read this passage with candles and soft music, and we talk about love, but that's not what Paul was writing about. Paul wasn't writing at all to married people. You know who Paul was writing to? He was writing to a church in the middle of a fight. He was writing to a church fight. There was a church in Corinth that had spiritual gifts. They had done great things. There were some wise teachers there, but they were in the middle of a church fight. They were competing with each other. There was problems. They were disagreeing over everything. That's why I always laugh when people say, I just wish our church could be a New Testament church. It is. We fight. There's politics. There's affairs. Same thing as the first church. It's like that in every church. Why? Because although church is an institution that God created, guess who it's made up of? Me and you. And we're broken, and we're hurting people, and we're always going to mess it up. And so many times, and if you're in here today and you stumbled back in and you've been through church hurt, please understand that's the human side of the equation that hurt you. It's not God. Because God is love, and he's going to define that love as we look at this passage. And so I know you're familiar with it, but I want you to hear it because love is more than words. And this is what he starts out in chapter 13. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but have not love, I'm only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all the mysteries and all knowledge, and I have a faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all that I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. So this church he's writing to has all of these things. They have people who are preaching prophecy, and they are speaking boldly, and they're saying some incredible things. They have people that are explaining the mysteries of the Bible and the Old Testament and talking about Jesus. There are people with these big faiths that can move mountains. There are people that are sacrificing. But he says, guess what? Without love, all those words are just noise. Without love, all those words are noise. Your gifts lose their meaning, and faith loses impact. Without love, you're just a clanging cymbal. Now, when I hear that words are noise, does that not just echo through our generation? I mean, if you look today and hear all the noise that is around us, you can't turn on the TV without noise. You can't look at Facebook or Instagram or any social media platform without hearing noise. We live in a time that is completely polluted with people stating their opinions. You have algorithms that are drawing you into a tribe, and that tribe is meant to hate this tribe, and there's isolation, and politics are so dividing that no one can agree on anything, and we get all worked up, and we get all angry, and we get all mad, and we start saying things that should never be said, and these are the followers of Jesus. So listen carefully to what love really is, because Jesus defined it is love others the way I love you. Wow. So what does that love look like? We're going to see that today because I want you to understand love is more than words. Listen, some of you listening today, you may have incredible spiritual gifts. Some of you listening today, you may know more of the Bible than anybody around you. You may know more of the Bible than I do. Some of you today could do my job better than I do it. Some of you have more faith, but listen closely to the words of Paul. If you don't love each other, if you don't love each other, none of that means anything. So the next time you get riled up, the next time you get your panties in a wad over somebody's Facebook post, the next time you're ready to attack and be a keyboard warrior, remember these words. You may have great knowledge. You may understand economics better. You may understand politics better. You may understand social justice better. But if you don't have love, you better put the computer down and go into your closet and pray. Because love is more than words. God isn't impressed with your spiritual performance. He's impressed with how we love one another. So this is how Paul defines it. Remember, this is a church fight. This is not a wedding ceremony. And he says, in the church, in your life, love is patient. Love is kind. It does not envy. It does not boast. It is not proud. It doesn't dishonor others. It is not self-seeking. It is not easily angered. It keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. So listen to that. In all of our relationships, love is patient. Love is patient. So if you're on the far right and someone sitting next to you is on the far left, you have to be patient with them. If someone says something stupid about the view you hold, you're supposed to continue to be kind. It says you're not to be seeking building yourself up, but building others. And then when someone wrongs you, you're supposed to keep no record of it. Because love isn't proven in the big moments. It's proven in the small, ordinary ones. Love is proven by the way you speak when you're tired. Love is proven when you respond when you're misunderstood. Love is proven when you handle conflict when it'd be easier to shut down. Now, next week, we're going to talk about how this love works itself out in the home, specifically between a man and wife. Because it has been my experience, and probably my failure at times in the past, that I see some of you, and you have more patience and more kindness to the person that waits on your table at the restaurant than you do your spouse. You're kinder to strangers than you are to the person you're spending your life with. And I want you to evaluate that for a minute. I want you to look at that in your own life, because you can say you love someone all you want, but love is acted out in the way you act. Now, how do we have an example of this? Let's look at Jesus, the God in flesh, Jesus, the King. In John 13, the King, the creator of all things, the great teacher, takes off his outer robe, wraps a towel around him, and bows at the feet of his disciples. And he washes their feet. That's love. Here's an amazing thing. You know, he loved and he washed the feet of the man that was going to betray him. The man that was about to betray him in a few hours. Jesus knew, but he still served him. So you think you can't serve someone on the other side of the political aisle? We should take our example from Jesus. When we learn to love, it means we are connected to him. And when we're connected to him, our life must change. Love is not loud, flashy. It's just faithful. It isn't soft. Love is strong enough to put somebody else first. And when we start plugging into Jesus, now listen, you may have all the spiritual gifts in the world, but you're like the iPhone that has all the bells and whistles, not the Android. And I know I've offended the four or five of you that have an Android. I mean, I want to love you. It just bothers me when my texts go from blue to green. That's all I'm saying. But for those of you that have the latest phone with all the gadgets and all the apps, last night our power went out and my phone was useless. You may consider yourself one of the most spiritual, knowledgeable people in the world. But without love, if you're not plugged into Jesus, you have no power. You have no power. So, how do you build this love that lasts? This is what Paul continues to say. Love never fails. Where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For right now, we know in part and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now, we see only a reflection as in a mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, and then I shall know fully, even as I'm fully known. And now these three remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of these is love. Folks, love connects us to God. Love anchors our life. Without love, we are a clanging cymbal. We're a resounding gong. And so I want you to hear that today. This is a love that lasts. This is what love is. And so if you're new to the faith, I'm not telling you you can get connected to Jesus and do it perfectly. You're not going to do it perfectly. I already mentioned we're all broken, right? You're going to fail at times. But I'm inviting you to stay as close to Jesus as you possibly can. And as you stay close to him, love will grow. Now I want to talk to you church members, people that come all the time. Love you to death. You've heard this sermon. You've heard this passage. You've heard me speak on this 100 times. And you're like, yeah, I've heard all that. That's not what I'm asking. What you have to ask yourself is, are you applying it? Have you grown in your love over the last year? Have you connected to Jesus in a way that you've seen things change in your life? Are you loving those around you that are different than you? Maybe you feel far from God. Maybe you feel like you can't get close to God. I'm just inviting you to reach out to him. If you feel stuck, I want you to know love isn't based on willpower. It's sustained by the grace of God. And so I want you just to hold on to him. So we're back where we started. Love isn't just when things are easy. Love is when people disappoint you, when tension rises, when words are said, and when your patience is tested. That's real life love. And so Paul tells us this. Get connected to Jesus. The more you're connected, the more you will experience love for one another. Now, the reason we love to talk about this and the reason we love Life Day is because it's just important to say why we follow Jesus and how Jesus changes us. And today, we get to see a visible example of people who said yes to Jesus. People who are coming forward and saying, my old way of living is done, and I want to walk in a new life. They've done it in their hearts, and now they're doing it publicly. Why? Because Jesus asked us to. Jesus says, once you accept him as Savior, if you're going to follow him, the first thing you need to do is be baptized. Just like the day I got married and my wife asked me to wear a ring. I choose to wear that ring to symbolize I have a relationship with her. So people are coming today. It's a public declaration of the decision they made in their heart. Followers of Jesus said, this is the direction I want my life to go. It's how we identify with Jesus. It's his death. It's his burial and resurrection. The old life is gone. The new life has come. It's the next step. It's not the finish line. It's not the end. It's the beginning of your spiritual walk. Now, I've been around long enough to know that as I start speaking these words, the Spirit of God is speaking to some of you. Now, there's a bunch of you already planning to get baptized, right? Hold your hand up if you've already said yes and you're getting baptized today. Where are you? They're all right, all around. Got a great, incredible group of people. But here's the kicker. Some of you came today not expecting to get baptized, but the Spirit of God is moving in your heart. Whenever the Spirit of God begins to move, Satan comes in to steal, kill, and destroy. And so can I tell you what some of you are thinking? Some of you right now are thinking, I'm not good enough. I'm not good enough. You're thinking, well, you just don't know. Last night, I get it. I don't want to know. But I know this. I know this. You don't have to be good enough. If that were a requirement, none of us would get baptized. You don't have to work your way to heaven. Baptism isn't for people who are good. It's for people who trust Jesus. And then another whisper Satan is whispering in your ears, you don't know enough. Neither do I. Neither do I. We're never going to know enough. You don't have to know enough. You don't have to understand the Bible. You don't have to understand anything about God except you believe in him and you trust him. That's all you have to know. Then many of you, you're afraid of what people will think. Billy Graham said something when he was alive that shook me. He said 80% of you in the room in Ennis that claim church membership are lost. Now, I didn't say it. Billy Graham said it. That scares me. And so maybe you're one of those and you're sitting there thinking, I'm a deacon in this church. If I go up there, what are people going to think? Can I just tell you, who cares? Who cares about your reputation? Who cares about what people think? My mom and dad baptized me when I was young. Okay, so it doesn't matter what people think. It matters what God thinks. I know you were baptized as a child. Can I be honest? If you were infant baptized, you had no choice in it, and you cried about it. You didn't want that. When it was for your mom and dad, nothing wrong with it. Your mom and dad dedicated you. That's fine. But that's not baptism the way I'm talking about baptism. That's not the symbol of giving your life to Christ. And some of you, when you were 8 years old, went to a VBS, Vacation Bible School. Remember those? And the preacher said, how many of you want to go to hell? And nobody raised their hand. I was actually knew about a church camp one time. And the preacher that was preaching church camp, carried out into the stage, a lit torch. And he asked for volunteers to come and put their hand in the torch. And of course, nobody's going to put their hand in the torch, right? And then his invitation was, you're going to burn for eternity in a flame just like this unless you get saved today. Whole camp got saved. I heard about it. I got saved again. I mean, crazy. That's not what it is. And so if you got scared into baptism, man, there's a better way. How about getting loved into baptism? Because you had a Savior who died on a cross for you, gave his life to make you a child of God. And now that you've accepted that, he's just asking you to make this public step. Now, here's the big one. This is where I'm going to catch most of you. Yeah, I need to do that. I'll do it later. Later seems safer, doesn't it? But here's the problem. Quietly, later never comes. I don't know when the next time the Spirit will be moving in you. We prepare for this. We have t-shirts and shorts. We're going to let you blow dry your hair so you can go to lunch, whatever you need to do. We'll take a picture and send it to your mama so she won't be mad. There's no reason to say no today. There's no reason to say later. Today is for you. The story begins today for some of you. So I want us to pray together. Will you join me? God, we come to you just as we are, not pretending, not performing, not trying to impress you. Some of us are full of love right now, and some of us are running on empty. Some of us aren't even sure what love is supposed to look like, but you know. You've shown us love that is patient and kind. You've shown us a love that doesn't keep score. You've shown us a love that stays when leaving would be easier. So today, we're not asking you to help us try harder. We're asking you to meet us where we are. For those that feel distance from you, draw them near. For those who feel wounded, bring them healing. For those that feel tired, give them rest. And for all of us, help us to grow in a kind of love that lasts. If you're here today and you're realizing that you don't need better relationships, you need a relationship with God, this is your moment. You don't have to clean yourself up. You don't have to have all the answers. You just have to open your heart. So right now, here's a simple prayer you can pray. God, I need you. I receive your grace. I trust Jesus with my life. Teach me how to love starting today. God, we thank you that you always meet us with grace. Thank you that your love doesn't give up. Thank you that you're still at work holding us together. We trust you in this moment. And we pray all of this in Jesus' name.
Thanks for joining us today. Our hope is that this message inspires you to encounter Jesus and find a better way to do life. We'd love to hear from you and get you connected on your journey. Visit theavenuechurch.com/connect to get started. To hear the latest from us, don't forget to subscribe. See you soon.